Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world. Okay, and welcome back to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. Today we got something quick for you. We got another piece of my visit a couple weeks ago with TC at the Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast, and we'll link to that in the show notes, the full podcast, which you can find on YouTube. And we also have an announcement that you've heard me kind of teasing for a little bit, but we got the Natural Order podcast coming up, and that should be live next week. Been working hard on that, and I'm just going to let this conversation roll, and we'll just take you out from right here, and at the end, we'll just go right in to the end of the show, and then we got, I think, one or two more portions with TC that we'll cut up in the future. But anyway, have a great Easter weekend if I don't hear from you or podcast to you here in the next couple days, which I'm planning on taking off, but you never know with me. You never know. And thanks for tuning in, and enjoy this close to 20 minutes with TC at the Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast.
Hey, we are back. Thanks for sticking with us. Are you all squared away?
We're all squared away. Yeah.
I've never done that in the middle of the stream. I might do that more often. Except now I need to find some people who want to run ads on my show,
and
I
can set up a whole.
So if there's anybody out there that's looking to run ads or sponsor somebody, I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
So, since I went on my little diatribe about what sports is all about here, and so your new show coming up, and it's not going to, I mean, it's going to be different in that it's focused more intently, and you're going to have a co-host with you, and that was your buddy Adam.
Yeah, and he's a sharp guy. He's actually on the executive committee of the Libertarian Party of Nevada, and actually hosts or co-hosts a podcast called the Battleborn Podcast.
Oh,
which is it's a pretty good show. They kind of rebooted it last year. So I don't know how familiar you are with libertarian politics, and just kind of being in the sphere of
Tom, I move in certain circles.
Yeah, Tom Woods and Dave Smith and those guys. Which
I have an
by
entire
the way,
series on the yeah. on the show that's called Libertarian Lowdown, where I interview libertarians from. I've had Monica Perez on. I've had Spike Cohen on and others. So
yeah, I was going to say. By the way, I you tweeted out something yesterday about must follows or must listens on Twitter, and you included me with the likes of Tom Woods and Dave Smith and John Ziegler and Scott Horton. I'm like, holy cow, man! This is good company. But anyway,
and Adam, reach out to me if you're on Twitter. I would love to have you and your like to have you on for Libertarian Lowdown sometime. To talk about your show. So now I've got somebody else to check out and see if they're going to make it into my must listen list there.
I meant
what I said yesterday. I do not name drop these people because I'm, you know, clout chasing.
Yeah.
If I plug my audience into people like, you know, you and Clint and, you know, Dave and Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the closest I've ever been to fanboying was when I got to meet Scott.
Yeah,
that was an amazing moment in my life, but mostly because Scott made me realize I wasn't insane.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I cut my teeth on traditional American values. You know, I went through a very brief, hell no, we won't glow, you know, peacenik kind of perspective when I was in high school, and that didn't last very long. Americanism had been, beat into me. Well, not physically, but, you know, just in, you know, philosophically to, you know, I had, you know, uncles that were vets. My dad would have been a vet, but his, you know, he couldn't serve even during Vietnam because the trigger finger on his right hand got cut off. And so they wouldn't take him into the military during Vietnam. They wouldn't even draft him for that. But my grandfather was a World War II vet. And so the idea of being, you know, pro-America, pro-military, you know, back these, you know, conflicts and whatnot. And the more I got involved and was watching, the more supportive I became of the military, especially with vets, and the less supportive I was of war. I was all on board with the Patriot Act, right?
Okay.
Oh, I was like, after 9-1-1, I mean, I knew who was the face of 9-1-1. The day it happened, I was a senior line chef at TGI Fridays in 2001 in Rochester, Minnesota. And like everything came to a standstill. You know, Rochester shut down because everybody was convinced that the Mayo Clinic was.
Oh, I never thought about it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. We were a major target at that point in everybody's mind. I mean, they were shutting down the malls. The Mayo Clinic was going into, you know, for lack of better terminology, like standby mode. They were waiting for it to happen. And the restaurant was just dead silent. And everybody was gathered around the TVs in the bar just watching. And I was looking at everybody around me and I said, you know, this is Osama bin Laden's fingerprints all over it. And the wave of patriotism that kind of united the country at that time to me was, you know, awe-inspiring.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And I was like, I can't, you know, we've got to retaliate. And then the Patriot Act came along and I was like, wow, this is, yeah, we've got to have a way of managing our enemies, you know? And then I watched and I was like, even that shortly afterwards, I started to kind of go, this is unsettling, and not because of terrorism, but they've got a lot of power. And all of a sudden the TSA comes around.
And, oh gosh. Give me. Yeah. That.
And I was like, I couldn't ever finish the thought because I wasn't connecting.
Yeah. It's like a lot of things. When you're talking about that, it reminds me of like, I get so angry about things that are just so insane. And like, I can't figure out a way to articulate it. But I guess, you know, getting back to kind of what I do is that I'm able to formulate these thoughts a bit better the more I actually talk, as opposed to talk in my head. And, you know, it's just a way to get it out and, you know, talk to good people about all these things.
Well, that's my buddy KD's watching. He's my sounding board quite a bit. I tell him why he's wrong, and then he takes it very well. I'm going to wait. He's going to make some sort of smart aleck. No, but he and I have some really great conversations. What Horton did for me was I kind of stumbled across him by accident. Woods talks an awful lot about the Soho Forum. And of course, you know, Dave Smith and Bernstein, they talk about Soho Forum on occasion. And I started looking up Soho Forum and I stumbled across Horton's debate with Bill Kristol.
Yeah, like a few months ago or last year. Yeah,
it was last year or whatever. Yeah. Well, it's even longer than that now. It's probably almost 2 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he smoked Kristol. Kristol didn't take it seriously and he just got ruined.
Oh, smoke is like that's generous.
Yeah,
he picked Bill Kristol up by the feet, mopped the floor with him, wrung him out, mopped the entire building with him.
Yeah,
put him back in the bucket and left him there wet.
Yeah, and Kristol could he couldn't care less. Yeah, like
yeah,
yeah. You know, it's like it's just one of those things. He came and like maybe
who's this taxi driver? This cab driver.
Yeah, right.
To debate me. Don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
It was really how it came off. And I was like, wow, I'm not insane. This stuff is all, it's all predicated on control. And when you look around and you watch now, and I'll launch into this then for current events and philosophy.
Sure.
When you watch the narrative with Ukraine and Russia, it is abundantly clear that there is one party in the United States, and that is the war party. That's because these traditionally anti-war, anti-conflict, anti-American interventionism, anti-American imperialism types are beating the war drum in lockstep with the neoconservative military-industrial complex.
I would actually probably push back on that a bit because I think that was only the case in the Vietnam era.
I agree with you on that. What I'm saying is in our lifetime, the side that we've always kind of pictured being the anti-war, anti-interventionist types have always been on the left.
Sure. Yeah, but that's only in our short lifetimes.
Right, in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Which is all that matters is what's happened in my life.
Yeah,
Brian.
But yeah, you look at it in historical...
History doesn't matter.
You look at it in historical... historical perspective and, you know, the Mr. Republican, Robert Taft, you know, he was the one saying, no, we don't need to be being global crusaders for whatever supposed justice and whatever. Now, it's like we need to defend our home.
Right.
And that's really kind of the origin of the United States as a polity, I guess, is that, you know, what was it? John Quincy. Well, I said another president that maybe had something good to say, even though I don't like much of what he said. John Quincy Adams said, you know, we don't need to go abroad looking for monsters to destroy or something to that effect. And, you know, it's true. Like, we don't. Why? I don't know if I podcasted about it. I definitely thought about it, but we don't need to be this global hegemon exporting quote unquote U.S. values or American values on the rest of the world. And I think it stemmed from that whole Lincoln thing that you, or excuse me, gosh, not Lincoln, Nixon thing that you mentioned earlier, right, where we want to export liberty, but liberty has nothing to do specifically by any means with the form of government, democracy in particular. Because the whole idea of this U.S. democracy has gotten so twisted and corrupted over the years. It's like one man, one vote. Well, it's not even today, it's not even really one man, one vote. But, you know, what the Constitution promised was Republican form of government, and not, that's small r, of course, right, where your communities come together and then voice an opinion. And now it's like you just get enough people voting on one side or the other and a Democrat wins or a Republican wins. And that's no good. You know, it's really no good. Right. I would probably argue that Republicans by and large are a bit better, certainly in local elections, but on a national scale, we've seen the destruction that they've wrought also. So, and certainly in Congress and Senate and
right. Well, to the point now where you look at the crew that the Liberty Caucus and how they have stood up against the mainstream normicon version of Republicanism at the federal state level, and the browbeating and the crap storm that they faced for not playing politics in the sense of doing what they were supposed to do, which was to back whoever they were told to back,
mm-hmm,
when they push against it. And you look at, you know, MTG's now just come under a massive firestorm of critique. And
yeah, I mean, she said about national divorce,
about a peaceful divorce, right? And people have turned her into a monster. There's your monster to destroy, right? There's MTG. Yeah. Destroy MTG, because she dared say we might need to start talking about a peaceful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about Tom Woods briefly earlier, and he's got a free ebook out there at I think it's naturaldivorce.com. You can just go and find that there. And he kind of, it's a short ebook, but he kind of breaks it down, like what everything possibly could look like. And, you know, I'm an advocate of, like I said earlier, of the I don't even know if it's would be necessarily called divorce, but, like, again, it's secession of the heart. I don't want to be in a polity with people who hate me and,
well, especially when,
or hate my ideas. And I don't really have like ideas that are particularly strange or I mean, controversial in the fact that, you know, if you're on the other side of what I think, yeah, that's controversy. But I mean, it's they're pretty measured, and everything I say or do is like pretty measured and reasonable, I think. And so I don't see myself as a firebrand of sorts. And actually, when I was talked about my kind of origin story in podcasting, and I was a sports podcaster, and I didn't want to be like the AM radio drive time talk radio guy, because that doesn't appeal to me. You know, because one of my guy I got to know through this, actually, you know, like you get to know a lot of people throughout the entire country or world that you wouldn't otherwise know in today's internet age.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And I'll just give a shout out to his name is Chad Collier, and he runs Papa C Pies in right outside of Nashville, Tennessee, in Brentwood. And
why does that sound really good?
Oh, they're I don't buy any other pies. I mail order. If I get pies, I mail order from Chad. But so I've been doing that, and I was like, well, you want to come on the podcast and talk sports and pie? Because I don't know how we even, like, again, I don't even know how we stumbled on like buying pies from him, but he we were having a chat, and he was saying, well, maybe he could be like the next Clay Travis, you know, you talk politics and sports. It's like, I kind of like some of the things Clay Travis says, read a couple of his books, but I don't want to be that type of personality. I'm a different guy. And I don't, you know, he's got obviously a much bigger reach. He took over, I think, the time slot from Rush Limbaugh, if I recall. But like, I don't go out wanting to be that kind of guy. I mean, I would like to talk sports, and I don't even really like to talk politics. Politics is entertaining to me.
When I launched my, you know, my channel, I didn't start out to be purely dissident to be dissident. I started out, you know, you go back to the foundation of the channels, April 25th, it was a Saturday of 2020.
Mm.
And it was after, you know, over a month of 2 weeks.
15 days to be really, yeah. You flattened the curve already in those 15 plus days.
Yeah, we flattened,
right?
The curve, and then we flattened everything else. So it was the Hiroshima and Nagasaki of virus responses is what it was. Overkill to the max. Boy, I'm gonna lose some people on that one. But I went out to just go capture man on the street interviews at a protest.
Mm.
You know, keep in mind at the time I'm a deputy in the third largest metro area, you know, county area in the state of Minnesota, working on the detention end, but still a sworn deputy. But I was really unsettled by what I was seeing take place in my home state. And so I just went out to go talk to people. I didn't go out to be a dissident voice. What made me dissident wasn't what I was saying. It was what was being said in public. Everything that I've said from well before 2020, well before the launch of my channel, my platform, well before, was normative in the sense of liberty loving, constitutionally respectful, republic loyal positions. The only thing that has changed for me in that dissident, you know, talking about this in this dissident perspective, has been the shift, and not a rapid shift, but an overwhelmingly massive collapse of the ability of the American people to recognize fast they took power. And by them, I mean the regimist types, how fast they took power and have been unwilling to relinquish it. I mean, you live in the land of King Gavin.
It's amazing.
Still he has executive orders.
He's a cockroach, man. He survived a recall election and then got voted in, not by a landslide. I think
the most profound thing I've heard you say since the time we've connected was he's a cockroach. I mean, that's apt.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't win by as big as a landslide as DeSantis did in Florida. But on the other end, he also ran against a feckless Republican within a feckless Republican party, in California that didn't even put up a contest against him. They just put up a candidate. They didn't put any money behind him, but like thinking that, oh my gosh, like Newsom's gonna hang himself. No, there's too many just bizarre people around here. And you know, I think the biggest problem kind of with the institutional cultural left is that everything about what they do is based on emotion. It's not rationality. It's not principles. It's emotion,
right?
And I get it.
That's human. Void of intellect.
It's human nature to be that way. But just step back a little bit and look what you're doing to not only the current state of things and the future. And you know, I mean, it's a long, hard slog to get through. But I just think that the culture is devolving, and one of my taglines for my show is serious content amidst an unserious culture. And that's something I really believe, that we're in an unserious culture. People aren't willing to address things. They'd rather just be ostriches and put their head in the sand and go on and like this didn't happen, or put pillows around their ears. like this isn't happening to me. I'm like, well, you're not five. I know what a five-year-old does. Yeah, they throw, they don't want to listen. They yell and scream and run around the house. But we're not, as grown humans, we're better than that. We should be better than that anyway.